Hello and welcome back to Estates Gazette's Midlands Question Time. Has it really been a year since we were in this room? Over the past 12 months, we've zigzagged the country with these events, and it's great to be back here. And with a brisk walk alongside the new Eastside Park this morning, it's nice to be somewhere where things are actually happening. It's also neat that this morning's Question Time coincides with a major investment event in the city organised by Business Birmingham. It wraps up today, and the visit from 10 of the world's top site selectors from the USA and Europe, who advise global companies on where to locate their operations. It's one of the biggest of any kind of its kind in any European city. But that's enough about what's going on elsewhere. Let's concentrate on our event this morning, and I'm delighted to say we have another excellent panel with us. On my far left is Mark Barrow, who's been the Strategic Director of Regeneration and Economic Development at Birmingham Council for just over 2 years. His job puts him in charge of the City Council's culture offering and development activity, including the Birmingham Enterprise Zone and transport infrastructure, as well as inward investment, economic development and the green economy. And I know we have some questions on that this morning. On my left is Paul Bassey, a long-established Midlands-based property investor. He's Chief Executive of Real Estate Investors PLC, which invests in commercial and residential real estate across the Midlands and the UK. He's also Executive Chairman of Bond Wolf, a prominent Black Country property investor and auctioneer, and the Regional Chairman of West Midlands, Coutts Bank. On my right is Jerry Blackett, who's been at the helm of Birmingham Birmingham Chamber of Commerce since July 2006, having joined the organisation 3 years ago. Previously, he was with Barclays Bank. He's mastered the art of articulating the needs of greater Birmingham businesses to decision makers, and in his time at the Chamber, he's driven a successful campaign to redesign Birmingham's New Street Station, amongst many other things. And on the far right is Barry Allen, who is a director and head of commercial regional development at Savills in Birmingham. He opened the office in 1998 and has seen it grow into a successful business in the regional market. Barry's work is diverse, ranging from urban mixed-use regeneration to science parks and rail freight distribution schemes. And we're grateful that Savills is our sponsor this morning. Those of you who were here last year or have been to our other events will be familiar with what is quite a well-known format, and thank you to all of you who've put forward questions to be put to the panel this morning. I'll be coming to those of you who've been notified, and I'm sure you're poised. And should anyone else here want to make a point of their own or ask a question or respond to a point made, put up your hand, I'll do my best to come to you. Comments, follow-up questions, and challenges appropriately delivered are all welcome. I'll also be asking a handful of questions of you this morning. If you look down on the arms of your seats, you'll see some voting buttons. And all being well, a handful of questions will pop up on the screens behind us at various points during the discussion. And we'd like to get your views, and the panel will be discussing your responses to them. Right, let's get straight to the questions. And the first question is from Stephen Osborne Brown. Stephen. If you just wait for the microphone to come to you.
I've already been warned to behave myself, so I'll stick to the question I posed. We have Paradise Circus, Mass House, HS2, the Library, Metro, John Lewis, New Street Station, but we still get a very bad press in Birmingham. So my question is, how can we individually and collectively do something to raise the profile and perception of the city nationally and internationally?
Mark.
Yeah. Right first. There's a range of things behind that, I think. One of them is just our natural makeup in the West Midlands, and some people have heard me say this before, I just don't think we boast and blag and kind of swagger around enough about all the really good things going on. I think sometimes when we get knocked, we don't respond as vigorously as other areas, to be frank. You know, you affront Liverpool and the whole of Liverpool is against you, kind of thing. I think we're doing really quite well in terms of kind of getting our message out to some of the parts of the world that matter. So in terms of investment markets and people that make decisions abroad, I think we're doing as well as any. It's a classic case of, I think, sometimes the perception within the UK, and certainly our perception locally, is out of step with other people's perception of us. It's one of the things that I find as I go around the place. I think the key thing...
Do you mean regionally you're harsher on yourself?
Yeah, I think we're quite self-critical of ourselves here, actually. We've got, you know, everybody that ever comes to Birmingham says, God, I didn't realise how good it is. You know, and we've just got to, you know, keep going at that and be consistent about that, not be relaxed about it. always on the front foot with kind of press and comms and marketing, and you know, really kind of, it's about building a brand, isn't it? And you do just the same with any kind of brand proposition, which is, you know, build on all your good bits and challenge all the other bits that need to be improved. So, could we be more joined up though and better at doing it locally? Probably yes, if I'm honest. I think there is work to be done. There are some bits to fill in, but I think we're doing reasonably well compared to kind of where we've been, if you like, in the past.
And how can it be done better? If things have improved and the problems, the diagnosis is there, what's the solution? How can that joined upness be improved?
Okay, well, I think let's kind of maybe reframe part of that. The old elevator pitch thing is the key thing for a lot of people. What's our strap line? What do you kind of tell people when you bump into them? And certainly what we've been trying to do with, for example, the economic zones that we've launched, is start to create a focal point for a range of things. So, you know, do we all describe, you know, the greater Birmingham area as the biggest cluster of creative digitals in the country? Because it is. No, we don't. We kind of don't create that perception. So everything we're trying to do in iCentrum at the Science Park is about creating that kind of anchor point, the focal point for that activity. Another one, the Life Sciences Hub that we're creating next to University Hospital, University of Birmingham. Again, you know, the Greater Birmingham area is the biggest cluster of medtech and biopharma in the country, both by number of companies and number of people employed. But do we think of ourselves like that? No, we don't. So it's about creating that focal point and that space for all those kind of interesting things to happen. So that, you know, we can kind of move away from this traditional heritage, which is great and we celebrate. What's our story in the modern economy, really? You know, the resurgence of manufacturing and JLR is a fantastic story, but what's the rest of it? You know, we are much more complex. We've got lots more to offer. Are we kind of really getting that kind of spread of all of the good things that are going on is also part of how we package the message. Because just banging on about things being good is one thing, but you need content in your story, don't you?
Okay, Paul, just before I come to you, I'd like to test you, the audience, and test the technology as well. With a first voting question, which, all being well, will pop up on the screen there. This was a difficult one to boil down into a very simple yes or no question, but what do you think? Does Birmingham have a PR problem? And while you're voting, Paul, let's get back to the original question. Shouldn't we be doing far more to raise the city's profile nationally and internationally?
Well, the simple answer is obviously yes. I don't disagree with what Mark says, but the plain facts of the matter are is everybody that's been responsible for PR and marketing of Birmingham has failed this area miserably over the last 30 years. Every time we bid for cultural city, stadium, you know, bag of chips, we'll lose it. We don't come second, in fact, we come third or fourth. And what's the reason for that? If this was my business, or as Mark says, my brand, I wouldn't have 15 different departments. Marketing Birmingham, Locate Birmingham, the Chamber, the Tech, Forward, all these things. We need one body, well-resourced, one board, one agenda, one message. And until we get to that, we're not going to get anywhere. And the reason we don't get to that, quite frankly, is that all these different boards completely get that we should have one message and one board. But they just won't give up their little kingdom. And until they all give their little kingdoms up, we're not going to get it right.
Do you see others doing it well, other cities in the UK or beyond?
Well, if you go to Manchester, I mean, they were not the... Manchester, let's be honest, Manchester's the second city. You know, we might want to kid ourselves. I wouldn't say that outside this room. Manchester has got personality, it's got drive, it's got a message, it's got an agenda. You know where you stand with Manchester. We've just got too many people with too many different messages. And as I said, if it were my business, I wouldn't have 25 heads of marketing with 25 different agendas, messages. My brand colours are, you know, we haven't got a brand, we've got 12 or 13 different messages. And if, you know, I'm surprised that's only 87.5%. You know, that's our problem. Until we fix that, we're going to be having this debate just like we've done for the last 30 years, every year and a half.
Mark, Paul says there that Manchester's the second city. Has it got so bad in a PR sense, in an international status sense, that you see that as the case now?
No, I don't, actually. For example, earlier this year at MIPIM, within two separate award categories, we came, I think, in the top 10 of places in Europe for FDI at the moment, and that's an FDI / Financial Times analysis, and one of the top 50 free zones in the world to come and invest at the moment, you know. So I think the message is getting there, and that's what I mean. I think there is a disconnect, though. I think, you know, our own reputation within the UK is something we need to work really hard on. I think we've actually kind of started to turn that corner in an international sense. And the difficulty there is that, you know, Manchester was set up as Greater Manchester in 1986. You know, we're still having discussions in this part of the world about, is it Greater Birmingham, or is it Birmingham and the Black Country, or, you know, everything else. To be fair, within our LEP, you know, everybody around the table kind of recognises that when you're talking to someone who is not familiar with the geography, you know, no one in China knows where Bromsgrove is. And, you know, the brand to get behind is Birmingham, and, you know, that's quite a grown-up approach. And that's all part of our legacy, to be honest. I think we kind of all need to just get behind something that will work for the whole area.
OK, some of you clearly believe that Birmingham doesn't have a PR problem. Does anyone who voted no want to explain why? Anyone feeling brave enough to do so? It'd be good to have a counter view here.
Can I just clarify? I haven't got a button either. I mean,
right. Just down here. Microphone will just be there in a second.
Ross Bendel. I voted no because I don't think Birmingham in itself has a PR problem, and everybody collectively in this room, it's a national debate with the States Gazette, and I think everybody should owe it to the city that Birmingham does have a fantastic story to tell. So on that basis, I don't think there is a problem with PR. A lot of it is external perceptions, which really we can't do very much to change. But, you know, effectively, Birmingham, marketing Birmingham and business Birmingham have done a fantastic job and I think continue to do so.
OK, thank you. Jerry, Birmingham has a fantastic story to tell. Does it tell it well?
It's interesting that the Economist article that you've probably all read and got steamed up about a week or so ago was written by a Brummy boy, wasn't it? It was written by somebody from Birmingham about Birmingham. I don't think that would happen outside. I don't think you'd find a Manchester local writing a story like that. So there is, you know, the fact that 87% of us think we have this problem means it will continue to be a problem until we deal with it. I would urge us to look forward. If you get engaged. I am very optimistic about local enterprise partnerships. They have re-energised local interest and a sense of identity and a sense of pride in place. So here's our chance. If you haven't read the LEP growth strategy, then you shame on you, because you should read it, you should engage in it, you should influence it, and then let's get behind it and make it happen. I'm hugely optimistic about Birmingham's story, but it does need all of us to tell it. It's not just an agency story problem. It's all of us believing it and then going out and telling that story.
And Paul's point about there being too many bodies and too diluted a message out there, does there need to be rationalisation? Manchester's rationalised, Leeds has rationalised more recently. Does Birmingham need to do so?
Yeah, we've got an opportunity, and Heseltine has shone a torch on that already by saying that there needs to be simplicity. And isn't it good that he's come to Birmingham to say, I'd like to work with Birmingham first to try and make some of the terrific common sense recommendations in his review come true? And part of that is making our city easier to do business with. We're a big city. That's great. But it does mean that at times we can be too big. We're not as big as London, so you've got pride in boroughs. You've got a million people trying to organise ourselves, and the sheer challenge of that means we've got lots of bodies. But I think that can all be turned to our advantage with some layers of simplicity. And I think we've got a real opportunity coming up to tackle those confusions, if you like, and do something about them. It's not very difficult to fix.
Barry, a similar topic was discussed here last year. You were on the panel last year. Have you seen things move forward? Have you seen progress in the last 12 months?
Politically or economically?
All round. Change and the appetite to secure that change.
I think we're moving forward. Maybe at times it doesn't feel like that. It's still very hard, and economically it's difficult. But I think there's a will to make progress, and there are some difficult decisions to be made, not least by the City Council in enabling further economic development, because, frankly, Birmingham is short of land for both housing and employment. Coming back to that question, I think Birmingham has a lot to shout about. But we need to get away from just publicising the icons. Not everything can be iconic. We had a period in the early 2000s of just wanting to build icons. And, you know, the city is not about iconic projects. It's about what it does and what it's really good at, in my view. And this is coming back to the other speaker's views. It's a very complex city. We've got a lot to be proud of. We need to shout about it. I don't think we're the second city to Manchester. I am a Lancastrian. I'm definitely not a Mancunian, so I would never accept that Manchester's the second city. I do think the political leadership in the past has failed us, and Manchester got it right through Howard Bernstein. The access to London was very important for Manchester. We didn't, as a city, appear to have that access, and therefore we weren't on the political agenda or the radar. Maybe with Heseltine coming back and I think a better communication, that's improving. But we've got to follow that through. I do think we've got to simplify the number of bodies. That's been the case for the last 20 years, and we just seem to have got more rather than less. And the LEPs have got to coordinate and work together, because nobody from outside the UK understands that the Black Country is different to Birmingham. They probably won't know where it is. Years and years and years ago, I went to the car show, car components shows in Detroit, and the Black Country were determined to have their own stand, and Coventry had their own stand, and Birmingham had their own stand, and nobody had a clue from elsewhere outside the UK what we were talking about. It was just the car industries in the UK in the Midlands, isn't it? We've got to get back to that message and promote what we've got very well. But we've got to get back to promoting what we do well, which is all sorts of different things, from making cars to jewellery to the creative industry market, which is huge potentially, and we undersell ourselves. And so, yeah, I think the PR message is not getting across because it's not being conveyed correctly. But we need that access to London. To some extent, it's all about capital cities at the moment and about London. We can't do very much about that because all the other regional cities, I think, suffer from the same problem. But we can take advantage of our economy and of our position on the northern edge of Wembley.
OK, we could spend all morning discussing that, yeah. But we have other issues, so we'll move on. Barry Sankey.
Birmingham has been very clearly in favour of HS2, though district and county councils to the south are frequently in opposition. Is the panel concerned that if such opposition was successful, the government would simply reroute HS2 and its probable extension north?
Paul.
It's a risk. There clearly is a concern, but we kind of come back to sort of question one again, don't we? These agencies that we've got representing us and our politicians need to get out there and make the case for HS2 even stronger. But take advantage of the opportunity to re-establish all the pluses about Birmingham. And I don't come from Manchester. I don't tell anyone I think it's the second city. But, you know, here's another platform for us to tell everybody what a great city this is. But if we're not careful, you know, the NIMBYs will get out there and they will, if nothing else, stall this. So I think there's a lot of responsibility on the heads of the City Council, the Chamber and others to get out there and tell everybody exactly why this has just got to happen.
And how important is it that it does happen?
Well, I think it's a lifeline to the area. With all the other good things that are happening with Land Rover and what have you, and if we can finally get the regional message right, you know, getting people here is important. And it's literally a quick journey in the global sort of scheme of things. And I think it's a key component to the future of the city.
OK, getting people here is important. If we can bring up the second audience question this morning, there is a danger that it's not just about getting people here, it's about repositioning Birmingham as a commuter town for London if transport gets that gets that swift. Is that a danger in your mind, Paul?
We can allow it to become a danger. I think Birmingham will benefit most, my view.
Okay. Okay, please do vote now. Jerry, your view.
Well, I think a number of points. HS2 gives us long-term planning. And isn't that something that we're always looking for? We're looking for a sense of certainty and a sense of perspective. And we've got a 30-year view, you might say, on what rail's going to look like around our way. That's very special. We do have to build the business case benefits more clearly for colleagues in Coventry and Stoke and elsewhere so that they really get the benefits. And there is some work going on right now to redo the business case for business for High Speed 2 because it hasn't taken account of any of the agglomeration benefits. It's just a traditional transport piece. So the regeneration aspects are going to be built in. That'll give us another opportunity to go out to local areas and explain what's in it for them too. And there's an awful lot in it for them. The fact that it's now going north means that we've also got others coming on board who are going to start to applaud the benefits of high-speed rail. So we'll have some more friends around the place north of Birmingham who also can see the power of it. My sense of it is that it's such a big commitment now going on. I mean, at the beginning of the year, I think there were 40 people employed by High Speed 2 Limited, and now there are getting on for a couple of hundred. The thing is, the momentum behind the scenes is happening, but it's a political football still. So if we don't keep going with the remorseless grinding messages about benefits, 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 then it could get knocked out of court. It's 2 years away from the hybrid bill. 2015 happens to be close to an election, so there's all sorts of possibilities for it to fall apart. You asked Paul whether it was how important it is. For those reasons, it's really important. But as Barry said, these grand projects are fantastic. But in order to get some stuff going, we need some short-term stuff as well. You know, we've got a massive backlog on road maintenance, road repairs, things that could get construction going, things that could create jobs. So yes, we need the big projects. But they take a long time, and I think we should be getting some of the short-term stuff away as well.
Okay, in case anyone's forgotten what the answers were, very clearly the audience believes that Birmingham will benefit most. Barry?
I suppose at one level one can say simply HS2 will or will not happen of its own volition. It has a charge on. They have geared up. They're intent on taking it through as quickly as they can. But those were the intentions for HS1, and it took 20 years. My real concern is that if it does take time, that a number of things A will be put back, as Jerry has said. And we shouldn't just rely on HS2 coming along because it could take some time, and it will take some time. And secondly, there is the danger of opportunities being blighted whilst we decide, and the government decide, whether to deliver HS2 or not. And we need to resolve those in the City Council and other authorities, but particularly the City Council, because we're directly affected in terms of where the rail line comes into Birmingham. We need to be working with HS2 and indeed not scared of challenging them. And challenging them, I think, doesn't mean that we're not supportive. It means that we're trying to get something right. And there are issues within the city where the rail line comes in, and there is a blight impact. And frankly, HS2 are not listening. And that concerns me because...
Are you talking about Washwood Heath here?
We're talking about Washwood Heath and some other areas. But there are some principal components of potential economic development delivery which are short-term, which are highly important to Birmingham. And HS2 are not listening. And that really is a worry. And that doesn't mean we're not supportive of HS2. It just means that we're trying to get it right. And they are very intent on maintaining programme. We don't think they've done their job correctly in terms of their assessments. And they need to do that work now, because otherwise they might be found out. And that would be damaging.
And does all of that, all of those challenges and opposition to parts of the plan have to come through the council, or
well, I think
can others play a role there?
I think the council are fundamental, and a number of parties are working with them and through them. And it should be a cooperative position, I think, because that collective position is much stronger. We need to see something like this delivered. We rely on good infrastructure in Birmingham, whether it's the motorway system, whether it's the upgrade of West Coast Mainline, and whether it's HS2, and indeed the extension of the runway to Birmingham Airport. So I don't think, as Gerry has quite rightly said, that we should put all of our eggs into the HS2 basket, because we won't see that for many years. We won't see the impact for many years. And we need to see the other infrastructure maintained and upgraded. And we need to work with Stoke and with Coventry so that they don't feel left behind, and so that the West Coast Mainline can be properly and efficiently used, both for passenger and for freight, to the benefit of the West Midlands.
OK, some of you believe that London would benefit more than Birmingham from HS2. Does anyone want to explain why? I think there were six of you. No.
Same six.
Mark,
your view. Union in the room.
Right, OK. I think, firstly, it's important to say that we're probably High Speed 2's biggest champion. But at the same time, and picking up what Barry was saying, we are quite a robust critical friend. You know, we want to make it work, and we want to make sure that it's done in a way that you make sure we're not storing up problems down the line. So now the safeguarding area is out, there's an opportunity to really work through every one of those issues all the way through the patch, and that's what we're doing with them. And they need our help, let's be honest, to make that work. I mean, I think now their compensation package has kind of come out and been known. I think that's made some things easier for a few people. It's, you know, common consensus is it's a pretty good package. But let's just be really clear. About a month ago, and Gerry was part of this, it was a delegation from Birmingham of cross-party and, you know, cross-sector and LEP people that went to talk to the PM about a range of things. And in that meeting, he gave that delegation the assurance that he and this government could not be more committed to making High Speed work. On Monday, there was again a joint meeting with Sir Albert Bohr, Andy Street, myself and some other colleagues from also the Black Country were in the room with the Secretary of State for Transport. He reiterated that same level of commitment. And there's an acceptance that you're not going to build the biggest rail project of its type in 100 years outside of London and please everybody. But their understanding is it is in the greater national interest. And actually, they're working harder and faster to shorten that time frame. So I think there's some more information to come out soon on that. So some really interesting kind of things there. The bit we were talking also about is what are we going to do collectively as two LEPs particularly working together to address that connectivity bit about maximising the opportunity. And at one level, we kind of look at you know, what High Speed does for Birmingham, and it actually turns us into Zone 4 in London. We're not worried about that. There's lots of work in Europe, in places like Lille and Lyon and some of the German cities, looking at the impact of High Speed on them. And you get polar growth. You do get both. There's a benefit in both ends of it. But, you know, we expect to get, you know, I think there's a survey showing, you know, more share of that growth. So we're pretty pleased about that. Interestingly, the research over there is you see economic impact for up to 10 years before it, because you see a flight of money towards as an investment opportunity, thinking about, well, what can they do to position themselves? You see the upfront construction activity economic impact, and as you know, £1 in construction is £2.84 in the economy. So there's a range of you know, great things there. The other interesting thing is, and I don't think everybody's really clicked this, is that when the first phase of High Speed is built to Birmingham, the same trains will still run north on the existing rail track up, you know, northwest to Manchester and on up north. So yeah, they do smart things with their wheels and it flips from one track to the other. But a lot of people think it's going to stop and then we've got to wait for the next bit to be built. Well, it isn't. So, you know, actually there is a direct impact the minute the Birmingham bit gets built for people in Manchester. And interestingly for Birmingham, because we expect a lot more traffic between Birmingham and the north. And there's another kind of benefit there that other cities in Europe have seen. They become nodal points that bring other traffic to them from elsewhere as part of that. So there's a lot of work going on to kind of maximise all of that opportunity.
Okay, that tension that you alluded to between the national interest and the local interest, one of the council's issues, as I understand it, is around Washwood Heath, an area that you've identified for industrial employment growth, and they're identified as the terminus. How will you be challenging that? How will you be challenging that? Will you appeal?
Well, we're working through with them to understand what it is that they actively need in the safeguarding area to make the thing work, and what is it they're just protecting to make sure that it's not impeded in any way, and there may be some flexibility, and that's what we're trying to get to at the moment. The key thing, I think, as Barry's alluded to there, is we're desperately keen to get economic development of all types going in the city as soon as possible. Washwood is a big site. If we're going to land anything of any size, you need big sites that are ready to go. So it is important, but it doesn't mean it can't work, and that's where we are at the moment, looking at what might be possible. So it is a case of watch this space at the moment.
Okay, thank you. Let's move on again. Greg Willis.
Good morning. What can we collectively do to stimulate commercial office growth in the city core?
Barry.
Thank you. Stimulate office growth in the city core. By that you mean stimulate new office development.
Broadening it out, I'd say Grade A and also the refurbishment of Grade B.
Okay. Inevitably, in a market which is starved of debt, and a market which is starved of any speculative risk, pretty well, then it's down to occupier demand. And so collectively, we've got to sell, we go back to the first question. Mm. Collectively, we've got to sell Birmingham and its great strengths and its attributes, and we've got to drag new investment by way of occupiers here. The investors will come and the developers are there. It's down to occupational demand. And so in general terms, I think Grade A development will for the moment be driven by pre-let. Now, we've seen that funding is achievable of bigger buildings like Snow Hill 2, where there's a substantial amount pre-let and there's an element of spec, and the funders are prepared to take that risk, but it still requires a major element of pre-let. Now, the other device, of course, which the city are working on with their partners Argent at Paradise Circus, is to use the enterprise zone as a way of cycling money into a major project, into major infrastructure to enable a site. But of course the price for that is, as I understand it, and Mark will probably be able to comment a little bit more, is that there will be a requirement on the fund to deliver at least one or two spec buildings, which is, I have to say, quite a big call on the fund. But if the city is prepared to raise through the LEP, 68 million to put into, I think it's 68 or 64 million to put into Paradise Circus, then they need to see some outputs.
Should we go to Mark straight away?
So I think that's the Grade A position, and maybe we'll come back to Grade B after that.
Mark, is that a requirement?
It is, but it's a balanced development, and there's a range of other things that offset that risk, I think, from our perspective, so we feel quite comfortable with that. The interesting thing, I'm with Barry, this is all about demand and growing demand. What are the factors that kind of also stimulate demand? Interestingly, the official Office for National Statistics are that between 2010 and 11, we grew as an economy by about 43,000 jobs. We don't think it's quite so many as that. I think some recategorisations, but there's at least half of that. And actually, when you peel into those figures, a good chunk of that is in business and professional, interestingly. It is still our biggest area of employment. And I think you'll see some recruitment kind of coming back in that area. But it's about the quality of the talent pool. It's about the quality of the networks. It's all those things around the agglomeration and what brings you to the centre of a city, which is what makes you, prioritise knowledge over space, let's be honest. That's what cities are all about. And that's just about kind of strengthening our proposition to those people that are making decisions at this point in time. the agents tell us that actually, in terms of grade A, we're heading for a shortage by about 2016. I think we're still on track for that, Barry?
Yes, I think we
are. So, you know, you'll see some churn, but you get churns in all sectors, don't you, in one way or another. So the question is, how do we maximise that opportunity as well, I think? And we're starting to see, you know, people come back to life and kind of recognise that that's a window that they're wanting to try and hit in one way or another. So we're in a good space, I think. Will it get back to the way it was? I think it's a different market now, actually. I think just as retail is very different, you know, market towns in shire areas are absolutely struggling, to be frank, but the destination places are still managing to kind of hold their own. And it's that kind of sense of, if you're going to be somewhere, it's got to be for a good reason, you know. And in the world of agile working and, you know, home working and et cetera, et cetera, it's got to be much more than just about bringing people together in a nice bit of space. There's got to be the other benefits. And this is maybe back to some of those points earlier about, you know, all of us that are working together to support business or provide support networks or provide space for mentoring and development or provide space for disruptive technologies and improvement. You know, it's about that wider offer, really, I think.
OK, Barry, just briefly on refurbished space.
Well, I think there's a growing appetite to look at those opportunities because it's quicker to market, very simply. So Mark alluded to the potential shortage of grade A coming through in the next 2 to 3 years. That's apparent. I don't think it's sufficient to push the funds into speccing grade A new build. And I think there will be opportunities which the PropCos, and Paul will no doubt comment on this because he's in that space, that will take advantage of to deliver high-quality refurbished space into that position and take advantage of that opportunity of a shortage, a potential shortage of better quality space in the right locations. But I think, you know, this is a Midlands question time. We shouldn't just talk about Birmingham. It's tempting to, but we shouldn't. But I think Mark is right that there is a concentration on the nodes. We've talked about in terms of infrastructure and where economic development becomes centred. It's a fortunate consequence for Birmingham, but probably an unfortunate consequence for some of the sub-regional centres, that they're going to lose out. Investment will be focused in the major cities where there are agglomeration benefits. And some of the other centres are just not going to deliver their big schemes. So I think, going back to the question, yes, refurb grade B, coming up to grade A, but as a refurbishment opportunity, I think that will take the strain in the short term, and the jury's out on delivery of further grade A new build, but we need to collectively attract the occupiers.
Paul, from an investor perspective, is City Core offices attractive?
I think the real answer to this question goes back to the first question. We've got to market Birmingham far more collectively, more imaginatively than we've done in the past. There are a couple of sort of rhinos in the room when you come to city centre office space. One is rates are a real problem. I mean, you can't afford to buy a scheme even out of cash because the rates are just so expensive. They're set against historic rent levels. And the other thing is usage. You know, we are going to have to look at alternative usage. I'm not so sure that I share Barry's view about other areas losing out, because if I look at the last 4 or 5 years, if you give me an office building in West Brom, and I know some of the lads here act for us all heard me say this before, I'd rather have a secondary building in West Brom than Birmingham City Centre. My rents in Birmingham have gone from £30 and £35 down to £20. In West Brom, they've only ever been 10 and 12. In West Brom, there's been a regular, steady occupier market. Come to Birmingham, there is no occupier market. I'm staggered by your stats, because our buildings are empty. I don't know where all these people have taken their office space up. It may be going in the right direction compared to a couple of years ago, but I think the real answer, we've got to get our image right. The BID project that's going on in Birmingham actually is working very well. I think that they've represented us well. They've got some fresh ideas, and they're bringing us together. I'm not sure, as I say, we'll lose out to the other areas, because if you can be on office space at £10 a square foot, much lower rates, easy car parking, easy access, metro, etc., etc. People don't want to come into Birmingham city centre anymore to pay £30 plus a service charge plus rates and find somewhere to park. So yeah, other regions are going to competition. Other areas are going to be competitive to Birmingham for those reasons.
OK, Gerry, and from an Occupy point of view?
I mean, I think it's all been said. Policy certainty has been made, and the money to do it. And I think the LEP's ambitions to raise the capital through enterprise zones and other mechanisms should give us some reason for optimism. But certainty of policy and go out and tell a long-term story.
OK, Mick Lawkins.
Hi, I'm Mick Lawkins. I'm Northampton Borough Council. We've got one of the enterprise zones, the Northampton Waterside Enterprise Zone. And the question is, what value do you place on enterprise zones to help with the economic recovery of the UK?
OK, we've got quite a few issues to get through, so let's try and deal with this one quite quickly. But, Gerry, I suppose at the heart of this question is, are the incentives sufficient to persuade someone to make a locational decision?
We'll find out, won't we? But I think the potential for them has got us all pretty excited about being able to incentivise in. We've got to learn the lessons of last time round, and that we don't just have stuff shifting from the city to another place in the city. But if we get the enterprise zone opportunity aligned to the long-term story of Birmingham, then businesses tell me that would excite them to invest. They can see it's not really the tax break, the fact they don't pay rates for a few years that's going to make a big difference to the sorts of businesses we want to attract to the enterprise zones. It's the certainty of direction that we see the city going in that will underpin it. The enterprise zone is just a helpful mechanism.
So it's symbolic, it's PR where we came in.
It's more than just symbolic. It has got some grist to it, but for the sorts of businesses we want to attract, saving £250,000 over 5 years on your business rates is not the game changer. But if they can see that the city has clarity of its ambitions around those physical sites, and we stitch together the skills pieces and the other pieces, then I think we've got a very, very attractive package. Very, very attractive.
OK. Another question for the audience. Are enterprise zones making a real difference, yes or no? And if six of you vote no, then I'll start to suspect there is something up with the system. Barry, enterprise zones, are they valuable? Do they make a difference?
I think they can do, depending on how they're used. If they're taken at face value, I think they have very little impact on demand by occupiers, which will change the game. The current crop of EZ is very different to the 80s EZs. and, of course, development was delivered on the back of capital allowances, essentially, arguably into the wrong places and for the wrong uses, but that was just a function of the market seeing the opportunity and the government not realising at the time. Actually, now, if the enterprise zones were in the right locations and capital allowances were introduced, then that would be a very powerful stimulus to development, but that isn't available. So I think out of all of the authorities, I have to congratulate Birmingham and the LEP, because they've actually used the EZ as a device. And it's essentially the Treasury trialling out TIFFs. It's a way of circulating some cash, but Birmingham have had to be bold and taken the risk on raising cash against future revenue, which is exactly what a TIFF will do. But they can't get through the legislation on TIFFs for a while, so they're doing it through the EZ. Now, the other local authorities haven't gone down that route, and those who haven't, I think, will probably find that the enterprise zones are a nice badge to have. I think Gerry's right. They give a steer towards where authorities want to see development and confidence, but actually, the fundamental advantages are pretty limited, in my view.
Well, I think those results highlight that perhaps we all feel that the jury's still out on enterprise zones. In the interest of getting through as many topics as possible, I will move on to the next subject.
Can I just make a point, though? I'm just echoing that point that Barry was just saying. I mean, we recognised at the outset that it wasn't actually about the zone and it's not about the sites, actually. What it's about is the opportunity to grab hold of all of that business rate uplift and leverage it. And we saw straight away that the name of the game was to maximise that, which is why ours is the biggest. You know? And we're going to gather about £875 million and borrow against it. We've already borrowed the first 130, and it's already leading to projects happening. And that's not a story that really kind of is really out there and people understand. So, you know, just putting 130 million straight into projects is something actually that you have to say is a real benefit.
Okay, Robert Tatry. I don't know why I look that way. Everyone sat over there. Sorry,
they're all together.
Hi, as a bit of a frustrated local developer when it comes to the planning system, how can we get more consistency into the planning system and actually speed the process up and get away from lots of local agendas that often get in the way of policy?
Paul, do you share that frustration?
A little bit. When you go to those of you who haven't been, when you go to a planning committee meeting, you expect qualified people to be able to assist you in making a decision. And I'm afraid what happens is you go in there and around the room will be a couple of retired guys who know nothing about the subject, a milkman, a butcher, a baker, a dentist. You know, our system's flawed. You know, we need... if there's a dispute amongst you surveyors, you go to an arbitration board and qualified, experienced people tell you what you should and shouldn't do. They're led by officers. I understand the politics and it's not so easy, but really we ought to have professional committees who are not driven by being voted in by their local guys, etc. So, you know, where it's flawed for me is that we've got unqualified, inexperienced individuals making decisions, and we need professional organisations and committees to make those decisions for us. I think they'd be quicker and kickstart everything we all need going again.
Mark, I see nodding out there. There's another aspect of this that I hear a lot is that there isn't enough resource going into planning departments. There have been cutbacks, decisions take longer to happen, and then once you reach the committee stage, there's a range of different, perhaps unqualified views around the table. Is planning in crisis?
No, not at all. And just to be clear, I wasn't nodding. The career limiting for me to be nodding as Paul was talking
members
about.
Members of the audience.
Let's just be clear. I think our planning service has improved dramatically, actually, in recent times. We've merged the planning service and regeneration service together, so you've got the same people doing both jobs. And predominantly, they're regeneration-driven people, so they're people with a can-do approach. Not just the enterprise zone, but the economic zones that we've brought forward have got simplified planning in place. And we've made the philosophical shift to making sure that our core strategy stroke master plans are as robust as they can, built on the big city plan. And actually everything around development control needs to be a bit more predictable and consistent and relatively straightforward for people. And that's where the neighbourhood planning agenda has moved things as well. So,
a developer said to me this week that they would willingly pay 10 times their planning fee in return for speedier decisions.
Well, interestingly, we're performing well in the top quartile in terms of turning around decisions on time. So we don't have necessarily a performance-related issue in Birmingham. But the issue is across the conurbation, it is more mixed. And that's, I think, what the development community, and let's be honest, who don't recognise any boundaries and lines on maps, get really frustrated at. Is you can go from one side of a road to another and get totally different responses. And the economy doesn't work like that either. So I think there's a challenge for all of us in local government to try and be more consistent across the piece. And what we've done in the LEP is actually we've got a joint group where officers are working together. We've all signed a charter. We're all trying to kind of harmonise our approach to things as much as we can. And we in Birmingham are helping support some of the smaller ones with some capacity issues as well. So we're getting there. But there's still more to do, I think.
Paul, a very quick response.
I'm pleased to hear you say that things are better. I don't think developers and property investors do not understand lines and what have you. Mm. And being the best of a bad bunch isn't good enough, quite honestly. It's the planning officers are saying yes. We're spending lots of money going through schemes and projects. We're being advised. I can give you one project we spent £1 million on with the executive, not in your borough. The officers have said yes, we turn up. Three guys who need 27 votes make us shift it to the next meeting and the next meeting and the next meeting. That's the real problem.
Okay, Barry, very quick for you, based on your clients. Is planning in a dark place at the moment?
I think it's struggling to emerge from a dark place. It's gone through a huge change. Those changes need to settle down. We're under a sort of new discipline now. And we've got to get used to the change in those national rules. I think there needs to be more certainty. Major planning applications are still too expensive. And I suppose the joke is that the government is thinking about putting more applications through what was the IPC, the National Infrastructure, Major Infrastructure Unit, through PINs now. Our experience of that is it's just fundamentally expensive and even slower than the standard planning system. So that major projects which do need to be delivered, which are not nuclear power stations but major schemes, will take 18 months to 2 years or more, and a huge amount of consultation, and probably cost £1.5 million to £2 million. Now, if you're asking the development industry to put that amount of cash out at risk, they've got to have some level of certainty. And so it's about risk, it's about certainty, and it's about timescale. But I think the government at the top level is pushing on their agencies to take positive decisions to underwrite the economic growth agenda. But it's got to cascade down, and it's got to get below the politician level to the officer level and so on. And the planning committees have then got to take the right decisions.
Okay, very quickly, the last few minutes, I just want to try and get two quick questions in. Adrian Thacker.
Mm-hmm. It's got to be on here.
Of course. It's all happening on this side.
Yeah, thank you. With nearly one in five young people being not in work, education or training in many parts of the Midlands, what strategies do the panel have for ensuring that these young people become net contributors to the region's economy?
Jerry.
Wow. There's our Achilles heel, isn't it? You know, we have too many, one in four young people not in work, 30% unemployment at Washwood Heath, Lascelles. A ticking problem for us if we don't engage them. If there was one thing I would do, I would really promote that vocational choice to young people. Out at the NEC on our doorstep last week was the skills show. We had 70,000 young people pass through the NEC trying to excite them and their parents and their teachers about the future for vocational work, where we have a huge gap, and it's where many of our residents could be skilled up to fairly quickly to get work. So time's tight, but I'd put a lot more work into the vocational agenda.
Paul, you were talking about this over coffee this morning.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know the big textbook answers to these things. What can we all do? Well, next time somebody writes into you and says, can I have a bit of work experience, the answer is yes.
Absolutely.
It really doesn't hurt that much. We have half a dozen people in every business we've got. They're a bit of a pain in the arse, I understand that. But you get one of those kids getting somewhere, they go back to an environment where they'll influence another five or six. So, you know, what can we actually do? It doesn't cost us anything, you know. Just say yes. If, you know, one of your friends, daughters or whatever needs a bit of help, just say yes. It's very, if we all just took a couple of kids on a year, it'd make a huge difference.
Okay, and a last question from Philip Twist.
Thank you. It really follows on from Barry's comment about Birmingham being good at the iconic historically. Library of Birmingham, New Street Gateway, and John Lewis to come. What next?
Barry, what next? Do we need another iconic project?
I think I've answered that question.
So what next if it's not another
iconic
project?
I think some really dull, boring development. some really good quality, straightforward development that delivers results. We don't need icons. We've got those dotted all over the city. It's, you know, my view is it's not about iconic development. We've got those, they're attractive. We were talking last night actually about what Korean tourists are actually coming to Birmingham to see. You know, what's in their brochure when they look at it in Seoul or wherever and think, I've got to go to Birmingham to see this. Where do they go around? And I suppose the picture is, you know, library, Victoria Square, John Lewis, Gateway, Metro, and all sorts. But we need to get back. We're in an austere recession, whatever. You know, we're in that period where we've got to retrench. We've got to do what we do well. We've got to go back to delivering good quality development. You know, where's the next Brindley Place? Brindley Place is not showy. It just delivered really good quality, solid product at a time. And we've got to go back to doing that, I think. We don't need trophies. We need solid players coming through because that's the bedrock of our economy. And so it's not just about offices, it's about the whole offer across each sector. We've got to deliver, and the city are you know, implicit to this. Certainly around Birmingham, we've got to deliver opportunity for industrial development. The city bringing through the economic growth zones, we're involved in one of them at Aston. There is good demand because there's a scarcity of good opportunity. So we've got to be able to deliver that basic stock in trade to allow Birmingham's businesses and indeed FDI to take advantage and locate and invest. The successor to John Lewis, in my view, a really big win would be 150,000 foot manufacturing new shed in Aston. Jerry. That would be brilliant.
Jerry, Barry's wrong, isn't he? Birmingham's reputation is going to change?
You know, I think Barry, that's a great answer, actually. Much better than the one I've got. because you're developers and property people, I mean, I could argue skills and all that sort of stuff, but if I was going to go down the iconic route, I'd like to have one thing that would cause the dwell time in Birmingham to extend. So
it's not going to be an industrial shed, is it?
Well, it probably won't, but when I go to London, I've got a few hours to kill, I go to Tate Modern. Now, on the east side of Birmingham, we're looking at the moment, I believe, at some kind of equivalent thing that means there's somewhere to go for 2 or 3 hours to lose yourself. Now, we've got the museum and art gallery, which is fine, but if I allow myself the luxury of an iconic moment, it would be something like that that would increase the dwell time in Birmingham. Paul?
I think Mark's going to tell him we've got lots of really good things in the pipeline, just in his notes. What next? I think what first, actually? We've got to get people to want to invest their money in this region, so we've got to get back to question one, getting answered. But I would go around tourism, believe it or not, research, education. These things will have a lasting effect here. And all those Chinese kids that educated themselves at Aston University 20 years ago still come back to Birmingham to do business. So it's that sort of longevity programme.
Mark?
Well, firstly, I think any other city in the UK would give its eye teeth for something like what's happening at New Street, actually. And what's happening over Paradise, to be frank. You know, it's easy to just go past them and not understand what that means. You know, New Street, we'll push through 52 million people a year, which is, you know, and the impact of it is fantastic. But I'm with Barry in a range of ways. I mean, interestingly, there are people talking to us about, let's call it interesting development. Not iconic, but, you know, reasonable quality. The sort of stuff that you think, well, I'm surprised that people are spending serious money on planning and design work, but they are at the moment on a range of things, which is interesting. I think some confidence is starting to creep back a bit. But kind of good quality consolidation, I think, is a good bit of it for me. You know, there is a period of churn still. You know, there's some stuff that's hanging around from, you know, 50s and 60s, which still actually isn't as good as we'd all like it to be, and it'd be good to see some of that move on. If I'm honest, the big thing for me also is about the quality of our public spaces. You know, so when the library is built, the thing that you'll next see is Centenary Square get redone into something that looks like the kind of piazza space you'd expect to see in a quality European city. Maybe back to the top of this, which was about comparing ourselves to others. I don't quote Margaret Thatcher much, but one quote from Margaret Thatcher is, if you have to tell someone you're a lady, you're probably not. And I think if you have to keep telling people you're a great place to be, then you're probably not. It's about the experience. You know, you turn up in a great place and you know it the minute you're there. You feel it, don't you? And the interesting thing is, you know, 460,000 people came to last year's Frankfurt market, and early trends are we're on track to kind of get somewhere near that. You know, it's that kind of stuff that speaks for itself, to be honest. So let's make the overall experience as good as it can be.
Okay, that's an appropriate note to end on. Thank you all for coming and for your participation and questions, but please join me in thanking our panel. Thank you.